Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is October 6th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 102. That's all the different ways I could say 102. I mean, that's not true. Math is wild. You could say 102 by saying, like, 98 plus 4. That's equal to 102. There's an infinite number of ways to say 102. One way is not to say it is, hi, I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today on Waypoint Radio is Patrick Klepek.
Austin, where are you? Do you need to explain to people what you're doing right now?
I'm on a phone. Alright, so.
Also Rob Zachney, before you launch into this.
Also Rob Zachney is here. I asked Danica if she wanted to join us, and then she didn't. Wait, I'm going to just check to make sure she didn't want to join us. I know we already started and we clapped, but I was like, hey, do you want to join us? And she was like, I thought you already recorded. And then I was like, we recorded Waypoint 101. And then, okay, good. She said you three should just do it. I'm glad I'm not just, it didn't just ignore her. The other day, I come home late from work. I'm like, I'm going to take a big sip of coffee and check the internet. And there wasn't any. There was no internet. The internet was gone. It had gone away. I know a thing or two about how to get the internet back. So I unplugged everything and plugged it all back in and changed wires.
A savvy man of the world.
That's true. That's me. None of it worked. The upstream and downstream like light on the modem kept blinking rapidly, meaning there was just like no connection to the internet. It just was nothing. So I check online and it says, oh, Queens, vandalism. There's a vandalism outage in Queens for my service. And so I look into it and it's like, okay, someone's going to come by. And it's not just me, like other people in the neighborhood who have had internet problems. My gut is that is not vandalism. It is construction. They have been digging up the road all along here for a while. That's my gut. Is it like a wire got cut or some shit? In any case, there was supposed to be a man here yesterday between like 11 and 3. And there just wasn't. There just was not a man. And so then when I called angry last night, they didn't. This is the second time this company has done this to us. Oh, we don't have any record of anyone requesting a person to come look. And they did this to us like the second that they took over. Oh, I'm trying not to throw any companies under the bus because of something that like. Or I'm not sure.
Have you tweeted at a brand on Twitter to see if you can get some VIP?
I tweeted to be like, hey,
Austin?
I tweeted to be like, yo, is this happening still? And they were like, send us your info. And so I called them instead.
Without naming names, this is a company that's known for servicing the New York metro
the New York
area.
Right. There used to be
and
one company,
and
then it became a different
its name.
Yes.
Yeah, and it has taken on a different name because the other name was considered toxic and terrible, but this new name.
They switched names and then immediately fucked us. Like, they immediately fucked us when they switched names. Like, they switched names and then signed us up for a phone and made it so that we couldn't have wired connections unless we paid an extra $50 a month. We were only allowed to use Wi-Fi. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wait,
it's unbelievable. Okay, oh, sorry. You could have one. We were able to have one wired connection. You couldn't split the. You couldn't use a router to actually have multiple wired connections. And I write about video games for a living. And my roommate is a game designer and a tabletop RPG game designer and also a technology journalist, like a trade industry journalist. And we both need the internet for work. And we often need fast internet that needs to be wired into the wall. Ugh. Anyway, at that time we were like, hey, we need someone to come out and fix this.
Doesn't give you Ethernet capability?
Now we pay more. We pay more dollars now.
And okay, I need to ask.
Unbelievable.
I'm sorry, I don't want to pry, but like, what are they making you pay for this amazing 21st century technology?
It's like $80 a month. It's $80 a month for like what's supposed to be gigabit internet, and it's super is not gigabit internet. It sucks. Yeah. It sucks. So back then they were like, oh, we're going to send out the technician to do whatever we need to do on your wire, on your box to like let us give you Ethernet access. And then we called back 2 days later when that person didn't show, and like, we don't have any record of you requesting this. Like, we yelled at you on the phone. We were very upset about this bullshit with the Ethernet. You remember. And then they finally sent somebody out the next day. And so the same shit is happening now where, like, that no one came and now someone's finally supposed to come tomorrow. So until then, you have called me, Rob, on Skype to my phone, which is a thing that I guess happens with Skype, but mostly I grew up using – not grew up, but, like, in the last decade, I'd used Skype just to talk to friends and just to chat other Skype friends, never to do a real phone call. Like, when I wanted to do a real phone call, I just used Google Voice instead. So this is novel. I'm at a desk. I have a cell phone to my ear. It's hot. It's dying, which means I don't have the ability to use a headset because I have an iPhone 7, which means it needs to be plugged in where the headset would go normally.
Oh my God.
So I'm just on one elbow on my desk. It's like I'm an old timey journalist. Ah, Watergate.
Well, the future is terrible, but so, I gotta say though, it's really nostalgic having an interaction like this to sort of leverage these archaic technologies like the telephone. And
what's wild
is, speaking of archaic technologies,
well, just real quick, I need to do one more real shout out, which is the way that this works is that I'm talking to you on a phone, but I'm still recording to my desktop into Audacity. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that file on this raw data USB PR key that they gave me at E3 or pre-E3, raw data, the VR game where you shoot robots or whatever. And I'm going to take this and then go to Starbucks and upload it there. Shout outs to Raw Data, a game that I don't like personally like that much, but like they gave me a 15 gig USB key. So that's all the payola you need. Fuck. Speaking of, what were you saying, Rob?
Archaic technologies and being forced to use communications media that you never foresaw yourself returning to. So news came out today that I guess the right way to put this is early in the 21st century, the Verizon Corporation, advanced communications, multinational company, decided to retire AOL Instant Messenger. Yeah, this is not called execution.
It's not called execution. It was called retirement. Yeah. There's no more AIM. They're getting rid of AIM in like 2 months.
December, yeah.
That's too soon. I got to keep up my friends list.
That sounds a lot to me, and then it super didn't.
I feel some kind of way. Patrick and I had an experience. Patrick has not stopped having experiences with AIM.
Well,
but
all of my... chat programs, both whether it's the iMessage on the Mac or I think I use Adium on a PC. Like you just punch in all your services, like
right.
AIM, GChat, and whatever. I don't know if ICQ is probably supported on Adium. That's probably one of the only services.
Oh, it definitely
punch
is.
Punch in ICQ as well. But like, I actually don't know which people I'm going to lose when AIM goes down because. For probably the good part of a decade, it's all just been aggregated into one list. Like, the list in any of these programs isn't like, this person's on AIM, this person's on GChat. It's just their names and how they're listed. So at some point when AIM goes down, I'll just not have those people on my list anymore. Because although AIM as a service is something that the vast majority of people have moved off of to do GChat and things like that, I have lots of people in which they... AIM is just it's always just stuck around, and we just talk through that because we've just been on lists forever,
right?
And so I got a message from someone today, a developer friend of mine, who was like, "Well, we're probably gonna have to exchange GChat or whatever because this isn't gonna work anymore." I was like, "Oh yeah, you're probably right." But yeah, I the internet is the rise of the internet for me is. Inexorably tied to AIM. Like, that was my main communication tool as a young, awkward kid. And that's like how I talked to girls the first time, you know, like in a talk to girls sort of way, like that that communication all happened passively over away messages.
And right.
Messages that you only felt brave enough to send when they were away and you knew they weren't going to see it.
And that you could edit, and that you could, like, not edit after you sent, but like, you could hit backspace on and, like, try to, like, work out. I mean, that's just, like, how
it's
a
like
lot
sending
of early
voicemail
socialization
without
works.
Actually, like, yes. doing the ring.
Right, or you could do the whole, like, send each other, like, subtextual messages via your away messages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. oh, man, is that song lyric about me? I don't know. I hope
yes,
so.
Yes, Katie,
but
it is
what does
about
it
you.
Mean?
It's true. Right. Yeah. Listen, Taking Back Sunday had a lot of feelings about...
Whoa.
You know,
whoa,
closeness and intimacy in America. it's weird. It's a weird
in which
thing
Austin
to be like,
tells on himself.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird to lose this thing that is not in my life at all anymore, except for that brief moment last year when I used it to talk to someone running an ARG, which was fun. But like, it's not in my life at all. But it still does feel like it feels like a road is being closed back home. Do you know what I mean? It feels like, you hear the old mall got shut down, and it's like that doesn't bother. It shouldn't bother me. I don't go to that mall anymore. I'm barely in town. You know, like. And even when I am in town, like it's because I hit a wrong by, you know, took a wrong turn. I opened up AIM by mistake. I opened up an old chat program and all my AIM people were there. Or like every now and then, because of the way things are integrated, like the way you're talking about, Patrick, is I'll see an old group, like an old like set of like my close friends group from AIM on a chat program that's completely never used it to talk to those people on. But like the header will show up and like. That is the weirdest shit. And so, like, hearing it is definitely nostalgia-inducing, but also just – it's interesting to think about the things that we use now. Like, when will those disappear, if they ever will? Things always seem so permanent, but not so much.
There was –
2037, no more Twitter.
There's been these – but the thing is with Twitter, though, it'll be archived in a way AIM you had to self-archive, right? You know, like
–
I think even, even if Twitter as a service is retired or something replaces it or they go out of business or something like that, like Twitter will be in the historical record in a way that AIM will not because it was, you know, it was private as opposed to public.
Right.
been this – a variation of this tweet going around and I'm going to botch the phrasing of it, but it's, you know, essentially – remember the way your heart used to skip a beat when you would hear the door open sound that AIM would play when your crush came on, and then you would just sit and stare at it and not send them a message, and then you'd see them go away. I was like, oh my God. Like that, I started sweating. Like I started sweating, like going back to that like moment in time. Like I specifically remember the girl that like I had those like heart palpitations about all the time in like late middle school, early high school. It never happened. Liz, I know you're still out there. She actually just got, just got engaged. I'm very happy for her.
Are you going to the wedding?
We're not. We did stopped being close a long time ago.
You should send her one where I am. Just not a trying to rekindle anything.
Okay.
Not a rekindling.
Six months later, Patrick is divorced, living out of like a friend's basement.
He's moving to New York.
He's never
going
to have a relationship with his daughter again.
Yeah.
This ended with me eventually getting the courage to send the message over AIM and getting shot down. So
Okay. So this just happens again.
I had the logical end game of how that works. Was like, I'm finally gonna do it, and I was like, can we just be friends? I was like, yeah.
So
yeah. Hold on. I've got to go change my profile quote.
Oh my God.
Turns out it's a Pinkerton day, not a Blue Album day.
Oh my God.
So for me, like, AIM is, it's tied to those kinds of feelings, but also it was like, it was sort of, Cheers, right? Like all your friends also, you could just like bullshit all the time. Your parents had no idea that you were like talking to each other. You were just kind of allowed to be yourself, on the internet in some ways. And it was this never ending, like rolling conversation. But the thing that I guess I remember most vividly, about AIM is actually sitting up like late into the night, like 3-4 in the morning, like every other night, talking to friends of mine. But one friend of mine in particular just was way more into music than I was. And so I was sort of getting belated musical education. And it was all via like him recommending stuff. And then I would plug it into Napster.
Right, of course.
Hell yeah,
and Napster. Start downloading it. And so two things. One is that, do you remember Napster had this feature where you could preview a track, and so as it was downloading, you could hear more of it.
And oh, so, yeah. Like,
after it downloaded a little bit, you could hit play, and then it would let you hear what it had so far of the song. And so I just vividly remember, like, these nights, like, basically how I ended up getting into Springsteen, actually, because my parents weren't super into him at the time, or they just didn't listen to him anymore. Maybe they'd gotten tired of him. But, like, so for me, like, this is a new discovery, and a friend of mine is like, you know, have you heard Atlantic City?
Right.
And I was like, oh, no, like, I don't know what that is. And so I'm downloading it off Napster, and, like, we're talking in AIM, and he's sort of telling me about, like, okay, there's Nebraska people, and there's Born to Run people.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. He's giving me the whole, like, intro to Springsteen and all that. But I was like, okay, whatever. I know Dancing in the Dark, and I figure, how different can this be? And then, like, so I hit, like, you know, play on Napster, and it's Atlantic City, and I've only got, like, the first minute of it. But the way that song opens,
yeah,
it is so stark and powerful and severe and hopeless and haunting. Immediately, like, totally changed the tenor of that night. Like, it was, you know, I'm in the basement, just lit by the light of AIM and Napster, and, like, this is my first time hearing it, and I'm, like, typing to my friend, like, holy shit, what is this? where do I get more of it? And he's like, well, yeah, it was great, and that's what I remember. It was these weird, they're almost like stopgap technologies in some ways. Like, we were in the process of transitioning to digital everything, services available anywhere, anytime, but we weren't there yet. But these were kind of pointing in that direction,
right?
And it was sort of a glimpse of, like, how life was going to change. At the time, it felt terribly exciting and romantic.
Well, part of it is.
Oh, go ahead.
Just part of the interesting thing about, like, that specific story is how much it's changed. That if today the version of that story is that person would have sent you a YouTube link and you would have watched it, and you may have liked it a lot.
Wouldn't have been the same.
You may have liked it a lot, and, like, maybe you add it to a playlist, but it's not yours, right? Like, the thing about file sharing programs like Napster were that, like, you downloaded it, you added it to your collection, or you didn't, you hit delete, you know, you got rid of it. And so you were always in this curative mode of, like, what on the internet is mine? What am I taking in to define myself by? What is this? Or you were a hoarder, in which case you hit download and downloaded everything you could possibly find, and then, like, had a huge collection of music you never listened to that was mislabeled, that said it was System of a Down covering Zelda song, and it absolutely was not. Or
fuck,
whatever,
that
right?
Like, that is way too real, Austin.
That's a very specific thing. Yes, that's a specific song.
Jesus,
I think it was Zelda.
That is too real.
The thing I was going to say before too, Patrick, is, like, the thing that you said of, like, being patient when someone comes on and, like, getting all you know, the butterflies in your stomach and your heart palpitations is so much better than the other thing that happened on AIM a lot, especially when you were younger and more awkward, which is your crush turns on and it comes on and you're like, I got to message this person immediately. Every time they come back from away,
yeah,
I'm the first person who's going to send that message. And, God, like, that's the worst. It's the worst. Oh. It's like one of the reasons why I actually – either of you played the Emily is Away games?
No, no. I've heard they're good though.
I've only played the first one, and I kind of hate it because the main dude is the worst. He is like that dude. He is like the – it's the packaging is nostalgic and it hits you because if you've grown up with services like AOL Instant Messenger, like everything from the user icon to the away messages to just like the basic interface is all very familiar and very like meaningful,
are you playing like a 14-year-old that doesn't know any better like us?
No, you're playing a college student. You're playing like, or like, okay, like a 17 or 18-year-old who's about to go away to college, basically.
Okay.
Or then does go away to college. It takes place over the course of like a year or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like the thing is, Patrick, like, yes, there's a version of this game that is like, wow, being immature. Like, I think that version of the game is Sybil, the Nina Freeman game, which is like actually both of these people like don't really know what they want, and early technologies allow you to have a lot of, or like these sorts of communications technologies allow you to have leeway in trying to pursue something, but maybe not really committing to it. And, you know, you always see things from a bunch of different people. You hear everybody's different side once you have Instant Messenger. Like everyone will tell you what the drama is from their perspective, literally at the same time. Like literally you'll get the message from, you know, some friend of yours and also their ex at the same time, and you'll get both sides of the story. Whereas in Emily's Away, it's like a pretty straightforward, like, I've been friend zoned. I want to not be friend zoned. And then like it frames things in such a way that like the positive outcome is just like not a thing that I don't know. It was just, it's a bummer that like the frame of that is so good, but like the fundamental story felt like it didn't learn lessons from having lived through those experiences. Like my experiences of AIM taught me to be a better person in terms of like being a friend to people who I was attracted to, and being okay with not dating them, and like being more comfortable talking to all sorts of people, and like Rob having the experiences that you had about just like, oh, it's just cool to connect to people and learn about them and what they're into, and having them open up new avenues for me. But if there's a way you could have gone through AIM and through the same way that you could go through 4chan, the same way you can go through Reddit, the same way you can go through all of these different places and technologies, and the same way you can go through Twitter for sure, and like wind up kind of miserable and like aggressive and hostile. And there's a little bit of that in, it's not all the way that far in Emily's Away, but there, like, there's shades of it there, and it's just like, ah, bummer. Anyway, we should send off AIM. We should all get on AIM on the, what is it, the 21st?
I'm on AIM right now.
Don't
come
don't,
at me. Just Surf Wax Cuomo.
What? No, it isn't. Is it? Is that really your AIM name?
Hell yeah, that's my AIM name, Surf Wax Cuomo. Hell yeah.
If someone IMs you, I can't be held accountable. You've put it out. You've doxed yourself twice.
I have. I've doxed myself till December 15th. I think here's what's good is that I think when I put out a tweet this morning about it, I think people thought my tweet was ironic.
No, Patrick's ride or die, man, on AIM. Fuck.
Here's a question. Did you guys – so this wasn't built into AIM – early days, you had to have like a third party client or a hack, but you could like start archiving your messages.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Were you archivers?
My guy, I think I have some right here.
Dude, I have a hard drive next to me that one time a couple of years ago, I opened it and I looked at those archives and I said, I don't have the heart to delete them, but I need to bury them.
Yep.
It's like looking it's like looking at a live journal or something like that. I would see those conversations and be like, fuck, man. Like, I wasn't doing anything gross. You're just like,
no, but you're just a kid. You're just a kid. I mean, this is the thing. It's like I've bounced from computer to computer in such a way that like I just reached over and grabbed this Surface that the internet separately, the Wi-Fi card on this Surface that I've had for a few years has finally broken. I dropped this on the ground or on my kitchen floor 2 years ago and it cracked the screen. And I think just liquid has slowly been rolling through the body of it and killing it bit by bit. And finally, it just the Wi-Fi on it's completely dead. But it has all of my stuff on it from like my previous laptop and the desktop I had before that and the laptop I had before that. That, but hidden in folders inside of folders inside of folders. You know what I mean? Like, do you guys have like a folder somewhere that's just called old stuff? Because I do.
Hell yeah.
And I think in there is where my old chat logs are. And that's, I don't even want to know. I do want to know. I'm looking. Take this computer away from me.
No, the heightened emotions will be too much, though. It'll be like,
You're probably right.
How did you survive on this like high octane, like rich mixture? Interaction all the time.
It's
like,
it's,
how were you always living at a fevered pitch?
It's weird that like when I look at photos, like obviously I have emotions, stuff like that, but I think part of the fact that I grew up on the internet and like AIM and like that form of communication was like so ingrained, like that's where I did a lot of like my awkward growing up was through that form of communication. When I look through those conversations, I get way more, I like go back to that place, that like uncomfortable version of yourself before you figured out yourself in a way when I look at that stuff far more than when like I look at an old yearbook photo or something from when I was, even photos of when I was that age, I don't go back to that like scared, like sweaty version of myself in the same way that I do when I look at those old logs or something like that. I don't know. There's something about that that puts me in a place in a different way.
I just found a message.
I archived everything.
Good.
I archived everything and sort of accidentally on purpose lost it all.
Is this accidentally the way you killed that fish this week?
Motherfucker, this is a public podcast. Okay, so the fish, I don't think I killed that fish. I think the fish died. There were other fish fatalities in that tank. I don't think it's on me. I think the fish got sick, the water got cloudy, then there was a dead fish. And that's sad, but fish die sometimes. I didn't kill a fish. Fish, like God killed that fish.
Not
like
your fish, to be clear.
No,
this whole trip
fish.
From the first Imperial Stout has been just a disaster, Rob.
Name one good thing that's happened.
I mean, really, I shouldn't have rinsed out the Imperial Stout bottles in the tank. That probably wasn't a great idea. No.
That was your first mistake.
Yeah. So I was staying with friends toward the end of college, and I had this slowly dying desktop PC, and it had like the archives of everything, fully documented, like every nightmarish thing. But I had recently, like, I was definitely at a different phase in my life. Like, I just had like a series of like pretty significant personal changes, and I just thought about taking that desktop with me, and I just didn't. Like, it was kind of half broken, needed some maintenance anyway, but, like, the main thing was, I was like, I don't think I want to bring what's on that hard drive with me around anymore. Like, I think I'm done with it. And sometimes I regret it, but for the most part, I am kind of glad that, like, you know, I burned all the journals.
That's the right thing to have done. I'm proud of you, past you, for having done that. I'm looking at conversations from 2005. I'm going to close this computer. I'm going to close it. Here's one in which I'm complaining. This is actually, I've mentioned this before, that Janine Hawkins and I go back, a Waypoint freelancer, industry freelancer at this point. She just reviewed, she's in the process of reviewing Divinity Original Sin for Polygon. She's done a lot of Polygon stuff. We've been friends for a long, long time. The same way, Patrick, that like you had old IRC friends who are still in the industry.
Brad Shoemaker,
exactly.
Known him since I was 12.
I found a message of me complaining to Janine that my girlfriend at the time was upset that I was going to a Zen monastery for a week to learn how to just be at a Zen monastery, but also to learn how to shoot Japanese style archery, which was a dope trip. And the thing that my girlfriend at the time told me was, "Don't change," which is really funny. And it's really wild to like look back to 2005 and time is weird. Time is weird. God.
Time is weird. Yeah.
Is anything else big happening in the world besides AIM going away? Or is everything just kind of normal and peaceful?
Nothing at all. So Austin, do you want to open up? Do you even want to start that?
You know, hey, you made me get into what happened to that beta fish.
Yeah.
We're going to get into all the other stuff.
Okay. We talk about how the White House Chief of Staff's phone was hacked. Is that what we want to talk about? Or do we want to talk about how
the decertification of the Iran deal? What do we want?
I really got to know. Are we going to talk about how this whole thing around bump stocks feels like it's been like dreamed up so that the NRA can give us one concession that doesn't really matter that much?
You can just 3D print that shit anyway, so what the fuck does it matter?
Just 3D print it. It's 2017, motherfucker. I'll go to Kinko's. Fuck.
Thoughts, prayers, and empty platitudes. Fuck.
Can we talk about like why Gamergate is hopping right now again?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
negative hopping, not positive hopping. I'm not saying like it's like a good club.
It's not like it's the place to be. The kids are bopping down at Gamergate.
Fuck me.
Come on, everybody. Borrow Dad's T-Bird and drive on down to the old Gamergate. Where, you know, the kids are going to be dancing all night long and then holding a torch rally.
Yep. Fuck. So it's been a weird week and for a lot of reasons. I think the one that's been on our minds lately has been this story that came out of BuzzFeed that we can't really talk about some aspects of it because the stuff is still ongoing. Patrick, do you want to give like the very broad summary and then how it connects to Gamergate so we can focus on the stuff that's like less ongoing in our neck of the woods?
Yeah, so there's a
less
really
ongoing,
excellent...
but you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a really excellent definition of long form. This is going to take you a solid 20, 30 minutes to get through, but it's worth your whole time. It seems essentially charts sort of the origins of Breitbart, of specifically of Milo Yiannopoulos, the racist piece of shit, I think is the technical
yep.
definition. Mm-hmm. People like to call him a provocateur, but that's a nice way of saying
fuck
asshole,
that shit. Yep.
Bad person. And essentially how he was propped up by Steve Bannon, a former, formerly of the White House, now back to being, I don't know if it's editor-in-chief or editor or CEO of Breitbart. It seems to be based on a cache of emails that were forwarded. I mean, there's other reporting around it, but largely yes. the foundational evidence is based on a bunch of emails that Milo sent, received over the course of a number of years, and just does the most thorough history. I mean, it's about as close as you can get to an oral history. It's but it's using emails as a way of charting and kind of pulling back the veil of places like Breitbart that claim to, be standing up for the common man and the ignored, and pulling that back and making it obvious that this was all about drumming up and exploiting and spreading white supremacy and racist ideas and all sort of things that they would try and wish-wash into gray areas. And this makes
right.
it very clear what the intentions were, what the language was, what they were trying to do, and has firsthand evidence of the people, the principal. It's not an analysis, because normally what you get with these stories is someone laying out, here's what these places are doing and how they're doing
right.
it. In this, you have firsthand evidence of the people saying, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. And it just, it involves Gamergate because... prior to Gamergate, Milo Yiannopoulos, for one, blamed video games as causes of violence and shat on video games. And his status rose on Gamergate as being sort of a voice and a sort of poster child for, the folks that were aggrieved as part of Gamergate, and sort of just charts that whole history. And the reason it's back in the news specifically is because what the story does is sort of call out specific names of people
right.
in the tech press, largely in the tech press, who were essentially buddy-buddy with Milo. And to go further than just being buddy-buddy, were essentially sending nuggets of information, whether they were accurate or not is completely besides the point, about folks like Zoe Quinn, about folks like Anita Sarkeesian, and mm-hmm. Doing it to fuel hit pieces that would then appear on places like Breitbart.
And this yeah. is where we should say there is a Vice connection to this that
there
a
is.
Lot of people are going to be thinking about. And the thing we have to say up front here is we cannot talk about that right now. There are obviously
yeah.
strong feelings and reactions to this, but this is just professionally, legally, this is not something we can address at this moment.
While things are still in progress, there was a Vice statement about the employee whose name came up, who's a senior reporter at Broadly, and he, some things that he sent or that were, in that piece. And their Vice's response is that, there's an investigation ongoing and that there is reviews are going to happen. All of that, as far as I know, is completely legit, and it is being taken seriously. And it is one of those things that I'd love to talk about down the road once that is fully taken care of or taken to its conclusion. We are pretty insistent on transparency here, so we just wanted to say that pretty much up front here. But I do want to leap from that to the larger conversation around the nightmare that is that at the time. The thing that happened with Gamergate was that it brought to the forefront for a lot of people things that were already true about the internet and being on the internet for people of color, for women, for trans folk, for just, you know, non-binary people, for people who are not from America, for, you know, all of these groups of people, all of these marginalized identities, that, they'd been experiencing in a smaller way or in personal ways, in less organized ways often, but not always, less organized ways for years. And Gamergate brought that up to the top and up to the surface for a lot of people to see, and also did help corral certain forces together in a way that would catalyze them and give them additional momentum and give them direction. And figures like Milo actively took a role in directing those people, along with people, you know, throughout the YouTube community, along with people on sites like 4chan who acted as directors, as, you know, there's the classic Gamergate canard of, like, there is no leader of Gamergate, but also they'll just do whatever the fucking the op of that day is. So, you know, there are different ways to have leaders. And the thing that is the most frustrating about this, the thing that's the most upsetting about the allegations throughout this piece, are that it was often the case that those people who were in positions of power in Gamergate, people who were in positions of power at sites like Breitbart, were directly working with the sorts of people who you thought you could trust if you were a target of Gamergate, if you were a target of harassment and doxing, and if you had been, if your life had been threatened, if you'd been sent, you know, threats of physical and sexual assault. Like, there are people here who are supposed to be the good ones, right? Who are people who are supposed to be allies, and who very, very, very much were not, which, you know, confirms a lot of the frustrating fears that you have as a marginalized person, which is that, like, even here I'm not safe. Even here I'm not convinced that the people around me who say they're acting in my best interests, what if one of them isn't? How do I let someone in? And then the big irony here is that a huge part of early Gamergate tactics were, like, the notion that there was some sort of games journalist conspiracy where people were feeding each other secret information. And there was. It's just not the thing you think it was.
I was right. The game, yes, you were target. Yes, absolutely. I was right on the list.
But now what the reveal is, like, oh, that was projection. Because, yes, Milo was the one who was receiving information from journalists, right? Like, the people who were publishing these stories at Breitbart were the people who were being fed secret information, private information, or information that would lead to the harassment of individuals. And it's just like, fuck, man. Like, it's so destabilizing and important that information got out there. Where do we think now, though? Like, because the big question that I've seen going back and forth is the same one that we've been kicking back and forth since the rise of Trump, which is, like, how easy is it to pin the rise of Trump, the rise of the alt-right, events like Charlottesville, to Gamergate?
Well, I mean, it's in the same way that, you know, those sympathetic to Nazi ideology existed prior to what we've seen in the last 12 months, where, you know, folks are walking around proudly, you know, wearing the emblems of Nazism. Like, people were sympathetic to Nazi ideology long before they were in the numbers out on the streets. And that's, Trump has made feel comfortable visualizing, being forward, right? I mean, I think that's what part of what Gamergate exposed to a lot of people was the forwardness for someone to say awful things, to say monstrous things, to participate in monstrous actions, knowing that there's no real consequence. And that's also what's happened in the last, since the you know, Trump came down as, you know, gold staircase, was giving license for people to do things in public that they had done in private. And that speaks, I think, the slowness over a course of more than 2 years for media figures and other people to stop taking Trump as a joke and not treating him as someone who could have won the presidency. In the same way that during Gamergate, like, lots of media outlets, including those I was a part of, didn't necessarily get on top of and speak forcefully enough about what was happening at the time.
Yeah.
Both the election of Trump and the existence of Gamergate were moments in which the veil dropped for a lot of people, and they were not prepared.
I think that's a good
they were not prepared for what you do once you've witnessed that.
Yeah, I think that that analogy is really strong. The notion of it being about a veil dropping, though at the same time, it's, you know, partially because it's about like this thing was already there. The thing that I totally worry about in this moment is that we are convincing ourselves of to care about one veil and missing another, or that the veil is smaller than we think it is, or you, rather, we think that the veil is bigger than it is, which is to say, mm-hmm. you know, the bulk of Trump's voting base, they're not alt-right people. They're not people who visit who even visit Breitbart. It's like the same block of people who voted for Mitt Romney voted for Trump. And then also this new group of new voters, young voters, you know, white working class voters, etc. That like again, actually, the white working class voters don't line up. Like, again, if you look back at past Republican elections, many of those people also voted for. Yes.
Oh, go ahead. If you flip the people who voted for Obama twice, then Clinton wins, right? So it's like there's a tiny margin that has to
flip. It is not. This is not like there were secretly a million more people who were going to fucking. r/Kotaku in action who are now suddenly that was not the turning ground, but it is an important thing to think about in terms of what public discourse is like and what is acceptable, because there is a knock-on effect from that stuff, and that knock-on effect is very real and very material.
There's
Rob, are you
so yeah. Maddie Myers from Kotaku was talking earlier about how people are talking about how Gamergate was the moment like that we could have like averted something, and her argument on Twitter was that like by that point it was already too late, and right. I have a great deal of sympathy for that argument, because like I suspect it's correct. Like, people who are radicalized during Gamergate just needed they needed to take that final step, but they've already been lost. I think back a lot of times to Dick Wolf's, actually.
Right, sure.
Which was easy to miss the significance of it because the controversy seemed so trivial, right? It was a weak webcomic joke that hurt some people, and then the apology of it was badly fumbled by... There was no apology. There was kind of doubling down from Penny Arcade. But the thing that really struck me as that was happening was... this idea that anybody would have the temerity to both be hurt and then ask for an apology was offensive and unbearable to a lot of people in what was then like the mainstream of the gaming community, including some of its leadership in the form of the gang at Penny Arcade. And this was 4 years before Gamergate, but it went in many of the same places: personal harassment, doxing,
making unsafe really public events and conventions for people who otherwise would have used them as you know, safe spaces to explore their hobbies. Like, yeah, there's a lot of overlap there, and of course it goes back further, right? Like, as always, there is history is twine tied again and again and again forever, and like it is so easy to look back at all those other moments where we could have interceded to maybe divert things, though I still don't think that lifts the – we need to make sure that when we say that, when we say we should have done something sooner, what we're not saying is, so it's okay that we didn't do something now, or it's okay that we didn't do something in the most recent instance.
And this is the other thing, though. I think one reason why it feels like now – everything is political, that there's no escaping the culture wars, that they permeate everything, is because to an extent we no longer have the luxury of pretending that these things do not carry wider significance. It's not a tempest in a teapot. People's beliefs are being shaped and changed by things that will seem small or trivial or just inexplicable to people outside of community, but it's no less real. And so that's kind of why, you know, increasingly you do, and this is sort of where it ties into those people who are sort of living double lives, you know, in respectable mainstream media, and then also sort of trying to sic Milo on people they didn't like. It's that you have to kind of look at these small decisions, these small choices, these small incidents, and what What picture are they painting of the people involved? What are they picturing? What picture are they painting of the communities involved? Because it's not nothing. It's not trivial. Like, this is where people's, you know what I mean? This isn't a big public. This is where people think they can get away with stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't know that they can assume people are not watching. This is where you see their true character in a lot of ways revealed. And so that's kind of.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Why, like, you know, 2017, the rest of our lives is going to be 2016. Like, it's always going to be heightened. It's always going to be looking at everything through these filters of, you know, does this betray bigotry, political intent? We don't have, because we can't pretend it doesn't anymore.
Yeah. I just briefly want to just, like, claim the floor to say, like, how fucking frustrating it is to have, and, like, I'm not putting either of you on blast specifically, but, like, I know a lot of our listeners were there in 2014 and were there during Dick Wolves and were there in the age of terrible 90s ads that were sexist and racist and were there their whole lives and have spoken up and have turned to their friends who are, you know, white dudes or people who have a little extra money or people who have platforms of their own and who have said, like, hey, this is serious. Hey, I don't feel safe. Hey, this fucking sucks. Like, this feels, I'm being made to feel like less of a person. When I bring up my fears and my complaints, I'm being told I'm being irrational. I am being told that what's happening here is a tempest in a teapot, or it's inside baseball, or it isn't a large enough story, or it isn't relevant to our readership, or it isn't, you know, this isn't a trend. This is a one-off. This is an outlier. This is a fluke. That the things are not as bad as you're saying that they are. And it's like, I don't know. It's like one of the most frustrating things to go through that shit and see people putting in the work who were marginalized, who were targeted, who were harassed, who did have friends in those places, and then to see their friends' hands tied often by someone in management, right? Like, by, you know, people at an outlet who were like, oh yeah, we want to write this thing, but, like, the lawyers say we shouldn't. To see and then on the other side, to see people who they thought they could trust say, you two deserve each other. To say that these two sides are equal or are in fact in line in some way or some dark reflection of each other. And it is wild to me that we are here now. And this isn't like, I'm trying not, this is not an I told you so. This is all like, let me speak for me and my friends in 2014 when we were fucking coming out of our heads. Because it sucked, man. It fucking sucked. Like, between Gamergate and between, like, the deaths of Eric Garner and Mike Brown, between the, like, the summer of Black Lives Matter and, like, the feeling that it was being made clear to marginalized people that their place in society, which had been, you know, hard fought for, that there's any wiggle room at all, that, like, even though it meant maybe not being you know, fully equal under in society, you were maybe equal under law after years and years and years of trying, to have that come under threat and to have those feelings be dismissed so thoroughly and so formulaically was just, like, devastating. And so, I wanted to just get that out there because it is a feeling I know that lots of people share, and that I hope that this time that, like, there's another flashpoint that we actually keep working on it and, like, look for material solutions and not just, you know, platitudes, because that is, it's what our place is. Like, I know internally for us, it means that you know, us three, that Danielle, that Danica, that Joel, that our team needs to be really aware and really thoughtful in everything we do. It means we have to be critical. It means we have to be reflective. It means that when we bring on freelancers, we have to be, you know, we have to be sure of who they are. And it means that we need to make sure that we're lifting up people's voices when we can. You know, like it is a reminder. This whole thing has been a reminder of the responsibility of what this platform that you all and our whole team and I have. And I hope we continue to do pretty good by it. I know that we've made missteps here or there, but I think by and large, I'm incredibly proud of what we've done. And I want to figure out how to keep doing good shit. So apologies for the weird, like, rant that swelled up in me out of nowhere. But here we are.
Well, and, you know, there was a tweet I put out yesterday when all of this happened. And I'll just read the tweet. It said, "Every day it's clear Gamergate was ground zero for our current hellscape. Too many of us failed to do the right thing. We were cowards." And one of the things I was trying to get at in that was not that any some statement or any tweet or blog could have killed
right.
Gamergate. Like, again, that because that
if
that,
only
that is yeah if there was I was going to reference our other podcast, but I'm not sure other people listen to that.
Right.
If there was some secret weapon that could have done, like, that didn't exist, and my tweet was not to imply that, oh, if only everyone had just spoken up, then it wouldn't have existed. Because that implies that Gamergate came out of nowhere, was a one-off, and wasn't part of a systemic targeting, harassment, abuse of groups of marginalized people, outliers in society for a very long time. What I meant by that was that the responsibility of platform holders, the people with voices, yeah. especially if you are participants in systemic structures that have disallowed those people, whether by accident or on purpose, from having a voice and participation in that, is that it is incumbent upon you in some way to do the platitudes, which is to say, like, we have your back. Like,
right.
we are there for you. Like, you are part of us. Those people are not part of this. Like, that is important, even if it doesn't destroy the thing. The point is not destroying. The point is, like, showing, like, that you care. Showing that, like, you should be, say, picking the side that you should. And so that was what I meant, was the equivocating, the
right.
Should we cover this, like, What if we get doxxed if we do this sort of conversations yeah. that happened were immensely frustrating, and they happened at a lot of media outlets. I saw some conversations that were happening today in which I don't want to name names, just not because they said it publicly, but I just don't want to raise the chance of people being targeted. Was that for a very popular media outlet, they chose to not put out a blanket sort of a condemnation of Gamergate because of the women on their staff.
Right.
Their fear was, and the women were complicit in this. They agreed with the decision. If we weigh in on this, the people who get targeted are us. And so right. they thought that, well, like a lot of people, maybe this will just blow over and we can move past. Instead, like, they ended up getting shit from people for not saying, like, this is wrong and you should call it what it is and be clear about it, that your outlet is recognizing as a platform that it's wrong. And those women ended up getting shit on and doxxed and fucked with and harassed anyway because
yeah.
they just happened to be. And that's the thing. Like, it's like make the statement, make the condemnation, because those are important, and realize the shitty stuff's
right.
going to happen anyway.
This is
especially
thing that
true at places with all male sites that
right.
pretended how things were somehow worse for you. And it's like, fucking grow up. Like, put on your big boy pants and,
That story that was going around today about the outlet where they avoided saying something in an attempt to protect the people on staff who would have been targets, and then those people were targeted anyway, just reminds me of a thing that we you know, for people who don't know, we also do Waypoint 101, which is a show that's kind of a deep dive into a specific game, kind of like a book club, and we just finished recording a two-hour episode about Wolfenstein The New Orders,
which is why we don't
chapters.
Have Danielle here for this conversation.
Yeah, we burned through
through Danielle's time.
Yes, Danielle had to go to a family thing, and so we burned through all of our Danielle time today on the Wolfenstein cast, where she was fantastic, and you should listen to that because it's very good. But during it, one of the things I brought up was one of the things that Wolfenstein seems to get right is that, you know, at least in the first six chapters that I've played, is that Nazi ideology exists and is a real thing and was, you know, had a whole bunch of propaganda and literature literature and was filled with ways of trying to find a scientific alibi and of you know, bullshit, you know, pseudoscience and you know, bad culture, you know, like distorted history and racist and anti-Semitic history and et cetera. But also, at the when it came down to it, it was fundamentally about power and about exerting power over others, that all of those rules would go away. In terms of like who they would and wouldn't target, in terms of who did and didn't count as Jewish, if someone in power wanted it to be different. Those rules were not law. Those rules were public guidance that then Nazis would use to hurt people and then ignore when it didn't serve their interests or you know, would invent new rules to hurt people when necessary. And seeing those sorts of tactics where it was like, okay, we'll try to protect our people because by making sure not to weigh in, like weighing in wasn't the thing that was getting them targeted. You know, like there wasn't a good set of behavior that is going to keep you from being targeted by people like that. The second that they smell blood, the second that someone like Milo thinks I can get, you know, a bigger public profile if I attack X, he'll make that leap. And that's what he did with gaming to begin with, as you talked about earlier, Patrick. It's like he went from someone who criticized games and said that they were causing violence to someone who was quote unquote defending free speech with them and it was anti-censorship because he recognized that would give him a boost and then, like, you know, moved away from it the second he felt like he'd squeezed out all the juice. It's a vulture. It's vulture behavior. It's the fucking grossest, emptiest shit because there are other people who do buy the ideology too, right? Like, they are – people like Milo are vultures, and then the people who get convinced who live on websites where they just, like, internalize all that shit go out to fight that fucking fight on the internet that you know, according to these rules that are built on nothing but sand. And it's just like, man – ugh, like it's so hard to figure out a strategy for combating it outside of taking care of people and giving them a place for their voices.
Well, and the other thing I would say is deciding who to listen to in good faith. Like, the other thing that emerges from those emails is that these were people who absolutely knew the blind spots that the way objectivity is often interpreted by journalists creates for them in their worldview. Right. These were people who, like, I mean, there's emails where Milo is specifically being told, like, look, man, don't make jokes about the Jews. Don't make jokes about gas chambers. Like, he had to be told, like, hey, that's not a good idea. And so the conduct you saw from him and his followers, you know, during the events of Gamergate and subsequently, that was the best they could manage. Like, that was them putting on their best possible public face. And one of the things that gave this oxygen was there were so many outlets and so many, like, and especially in the mainstream when they were talking about, like, why are gamers up in arms?
Yeah.
There were so many people who were looking at this and saying, well, it's, you know, the classic gotta hear both sides. Well, yep. what are these folks' grievances? And those grievances are presented as if they are true, as if what people are saying about their motivations and intentions is inherently true, and we must take that at face value, even though there's a lot to suggest, hey, these people might be white supremacists, Nazis, you know, like virulent misogynists.
Yeah.
There's a lot of evidence to, like, say what these people are telling you is probably not true. They have every reason to lie about their evidence, lie about their motivations, lie about their intentions. And yet, time and again, it was treated as, well, you know, what are they really saying here? What are they really trying to tell us about gaming culture? And because journalists love to self-reflect and self-critique and often think, like, man, it does sometimes feel like a bubble here. Maybe we're not being fair enough to, you know, the reactionary mindset. Time and time again, we let people like this through the cracks and into the debate. We let them into the public square to present their lies. And then treat them at face value when their only intent is to deceive and get a broader platform.
Yeah. It's funny. Last night I was last night at 4 a.m. or whatever, when I wasn't sleeping, I noticed that there was a an editorial went up over on The Guardian from John Harris, and it was, if journalists take sides, who will speak truth to power? The idea that those who seek to hold the mighty to account should be activists is a very dangerous one. And you know, this is about British politics and political reporting in England. The Guardian is a really solid British newspaper. But that op-ed, or that column rather, was this, just like, so many young people grow up wanting to be polemicists instead of being journalists now. And, you know, in the old days, the way that you took down someone who was corrupt was by questioning them very carefully. And the thing that's bugging me out is the notion that we're not able to do both. Or that we don't, that there's no room for outlets that do both. Like, we've been pretty upfront about what Waypoint's politics are and about where we stand on certain spectrums. We also don't write hit pieces. We also do interviews about things that are really tough. We do our best to confront people who say things that we disagree with and force them to explain it. And there's also just a spectrum of outlet in the world, right? Like, we don't need to be, like, The Guardian needs to be one thing, but it doesn't need to be the same thing that every other British newspaper is. All of those different newspapers can be different things, and we have to take a pluralistic attempt at figuring out how to confront these things. Otherwise, we're just wasting our time.
Yeah, and I think this often, that sort of pluralism often gets interpreted in some places as, oh, what we need is ideological pluralism, which
right.
has some value, but probably not nearly as much value as giving, like, as in diversifying the people who are appearing on your platform. Right, like getting outside, getting to other communities, both in terms of you know minorities, but also like socioeconomic status, educational background. Like, talk to people who are not like do not just endlessly replicate like people of identical social background and education.
Find a different source. Like, I know you want to go to that one dude who always is willing to give a quote. Find a different source. This is, I'm talking to journalists right now. It's so easy. It's so easy to fall into the trap of like, yeah, like this person's always available. It's always able to give quote. Like, they're an expert in this thing. Make sure that in doing that, you're not missing another perspective that's important. And do that as readers too. Is like, make sure that just by going to the same outlets, you're not missing something that is like pretty obvious on second thought in terms of like, whose position is there. Like, God, I don't remember what this was. This was recently. It was like in the responses to something about a recent game, probably Shadow of War, which came out and still has weird orc enslavement in it, like pretty much as a key mechanic without any dressing it up in any way. But someone was like, but everyone, blah, 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 blah. And it was one of those moments of like, who is everyone? Like, who? I really got to know who you mean by everyone, because it's pretty clear you don't mean like people who look like me or people who you know, just anybody who doesn't look like you. And like, it's always, try to be aware of that stuff as a reader and find sources and find reporting that blows that up a little bit. But also don't be afraid to find reporting that is interested in diving into the aspects of stuff that you are. Like, I know that for a lot of people, Waypoint has stood out because we're willing to talk about labor pretty directly, that we are able to say, like, hey, here is what we think about the voice actor strike. And also, we're not like just repeating the words that were given to us by the quote unquote, the video game companies in that ongoing or in that dispute where they were talking about quote unquote residuals. We're actually like, well, they are actually just bonuses. They're not like Hollywood residuals. They're different things. I know that, like, that's one of those things that's like, it helps set us apart. That said, like, I also know that sometimes we just miss on that, right? Like, we did a couple of stories about Life is Strange without talking about the labor angle, without talking about the voice actor strike, which is a strike that we had covered substantially all year last year, the end of the year last year. And so that was like one of those moments of like, even the places that do have it have like, who do want to cover the stuff that you're interested in, sometimes fuck up or sometimes miss something. And so like, don't be afraid to hold you know, publications you care about accountable and let them know what you want to see from them, because that helps a lot. Like, I think that the people who responded to outlets back during Gamergate and said, like, come on, like, are you kidding me? Like, I love this place. This is the place I feel safe. I need to know if I'm welcome here, or if those people are welcome here. Like, I would rather there be a world in which I get 100 messages that say, like, here's how you could do better, than one in which those people just left because they didn't feel safe here anymore, you know?
Well, and that Life is Strange thing was, that went by all of us. And then someone pointed it out on Twitter and said, how do you reconcile this? And then we had a conversation that was like, shit, like,
we fucked up.
I mean, we've got that, like, if you wanted to write about it, we at least needed to put in those articles, like, hey, by the way, like, here's what's going on with this game. We still decided to write about it, but you need to be informed. We've done coverage. Like, there was a world where we could have,
it would have been so easy to add that paragraph. And that's one of those things.
And we needed someone to remind us, like, hey, that was a blind spot. We're all on the same page politically and about all these things, but still that stuff is going to slip through because that shit happens. But then we rely on outside forces, our fans, like, even the people that love what we do, like, this is something I always harp on when, like, people get called out on, like, when they say, like, sexist or racist shit. Like, doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you said something sexist or racist, or in this case, we, like, overlooked something that was related to a labor dispute that we should have, like, mentioned. Like, doesn't mean that, like, we're
anti-labor.
It just means we missed something and that in the future do better.
Like, and that's pretty easy. There does come a time when you draw that line and you say, you know, racist, right? Like, we did this recently. Right. We ran a story this past week about A Hat in Time. Someone pointed out a thing I didn't really know, which was that JonTron was in A Hat in Time, this platformer, apparently. We ran a
note on it. He was pulled out of ukulele, like, because of what happened. And then it's been, you know, 6 months or whatever since he said a bunch of really, like,
racist shit.
We were talking about, like, the language you should use to describe, like, I think the distinction we were drawing was like two versions of how we could have described him was JonTron, someone who has been known for making racist comments, or the, like, known racist JonTron. And those are like two very different ways to label someone. So we, like,
this
back,
is a guy who's never apologized.
Looked at our reporting, looked at what he said, and we're like, nah. He had no come to Jesus moment, and that stuff he said was fucked up.
Yes.
He's just a racist.
Right. And that's the thing, is, like, I don't want to, there's often the notion of, like, there's a great old Jay Smooth video about this. Jay Smooth, the YouTube creator, content creator, DJ in New York, like, deep hip hop history, culture here, love his stuff to death. Shout out to Jay Smooth. He had a video years ago that was like, don't get caught up in the are you racist, you know, is he racist conversation. Say that thing you said was racist, because that's the thing that you can actually attack at. You won't get swerved, and the whole conversation won't turn into, well, I have all these black friends, or, like, with Milo, right? Like, Milo's in a relationship with a black man, and so, like, and often uses that as cover to say, I can't be racist. But, like, no, actually, I want to make sure that it's clear that we can say that someone is racist. We can say that someone is, excuse me, is sexist. Not only they said a racist thing. There are times when that distinction is important, and it is important to levy that distinction. And it's a judgment call. And it's a judgment call that has to be informed by reporting, by, like, careful observation, by dialogue internally, by, you know, conversation and making sure that we come to a decision that we can stand by. But it is definitely an important one. And, like, it's one that I, again, you gotta hold us accountable when we do it right. You gotta, or when we don't do it right, and we hope that in doing it right, we make it clear, like, where we stand on this stuff, because I don't want to be in a situation where something like Gamergate happens again and have people for a second worry about where we're gonna be on that. You know, like, when I was interviewing for this job, I sat down with my boss and the editor-in-chief of Vice.com, Jonathan Smith, my boss, CL, and she said, like, okay, so, like, what happens if something like Gamergate happens again tomorrow? Like, in your vision, what does Vice Gaming at the time do? Like, what sort of thing do you do? And I like, said we'd have to hit it head on. I am not going to take a back seat and try to play both sides. I'm not going to try to, like, give a platform to anyone who I think is presenting not just, like, ideas I don't agree with, but ideas that are hostile and dehumanizing. And we have to be the first loudest voices out there. Otherwise, we've missed the boat. Like, we've just not We've just not paid attention to what's important and what this space needs right now. And I was like relieved for her to say like, good, like that's the exact right answer. And like, even when facing the risk of being, you know, a target again myself, or the risk of having people boycott or whatever, like those are the sorts of things where I hope I do right when it's time for that to happen again, because, or when it's happening now, right? We're having this conversation. So I hope that that's to some degree a proof that we're interested in being that place and continuing to tackle this bullshit. So we're going to do a short one. Instead, we did 70 minutes. I was supposed to do a short one.
Very shortly, because we've already gone long. Yes. You gotta without no spoilers, but in your Austin Walker way.
Oh yeah,
Blade Runner.
Yeah, I saw Blade Runner last night. So I wrote about Blade Runner yesterday. I've been meaning to write about Blade Runner for like 2 weeks because I am a big fan, and I get into that in this piece. If you go to waypointsadvice.com, you can read this. I get into why I went from being very like dispassionate about the Blade Runner sequel to being deeply anxious. I think the headline was, for years I didn't care about a Blade Runner sequel, now I'm a mess, which is true. And then I went and saw it. Like, almost on a whim, I messaged a friend. I was like, hey, do you want to go see Blade Runner at 7? Because I guess it's out at 7. Like, I thought it was going to be a midnight showing, but it wasn't. It was a 7 p.m. showing. So I went, and I saw it, and I really liked it. It is a Blade Runner movie. The tweet that I made last night was, I knew it was a true Blade Runner sequel when the dude to my right had started snoring for the third time. It languishes. It luxuriates in slow moving moments and quiet and open spaces and color. It's gorgeous. It is. You remember, Patrick, when we talked about Nier Automata or Automata, whichever one you prefer. We talked about how it wasn't doing the 101 thing with androids. It was like this second tier of thing where, like,
yeah.
Our androids people, yeah. We had that conversation already. We're gonna do the second level thing. A lot of the big questions of Blade Runner 2049 are that big second thing, or are a big second thing. Lots of stuff there about you know, intimacy. Lots of things there about agency. Lots of things there about where meaning comes from, like whether or not what matters to us like should be based on an objective fact or a subjective fact. I liked it a lot. I think there's some stuff there that I'm really interested to hear from other people about. I really want to hear what sex workers think about this movie, because it does interesting things. It does things with sex work that are not what I expected it to do, because cyberpunk normally does one thing with sex work, which is like there are sex workers and they are like I don't know, like they're it's scenery. Always just like there's background scenery. They get killed. And they, like, are a representation of how degrading the future is. And it doesn't really do that. It does a different thing that's really interesting, but I'm holding out my personal read on those key scenes. And there's, like, a bunch of stuff that I just want to read a lot of different perspectives on. But as a cyberpunk film that's engaged with cyberpunk as a genre, that as a genre that has a history and has a politics, it does a thing. Like, it is about a thing. It's about a bunch of things the way that good cyberpunk often is, and it's not just flying cars and oil fields. Do you know what I mean? The thing that I say again and again and again about it's not just flying cars without the oil fields, right? It isn't just the neon signs without thinking about where the neon signs come from. It's not just the sci-fi technology without thinking about what that thing reflects, whether that's about the environment or about human relationship with technology or about human relationship with each other or about, you know, politics. Like it is very much in tune with that part of cyberpunk. It is just gorgeous. And Gosling is really good. All the actors do a great job. Even fucking Jared Leto, who I want to fucking punch in the fucking face. Patrick, damn. You'll never, like, I want to punch him in the fucking face so bad, but that character is supposed to be punchable. He's the fucking worst. Okay. You should see it. He's the fucking worst. And also, I don't know. There's stuff people should see it. I need to sit with it. I'm going to see it.
Villeneuve? Is that how you pronounce that guy's last name?
Villeneuve? Yeah.
Either way, Denis. All he does is hit home runs. This motherfucker's going to go make Dune next? Come on.
I'm so excited about that. That's going to be wild. Like,
he can make anything now. Just whatever. Sci-fi Renaissance. He's bringing it in Dune, solely himself.
That's like Dune. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go to the South Pole now. I'm not using dogs.
Yeah, dogs. But he just made a Blade Runner sequel that's like 98 on Rotten Tomatoes. So, like, blank check at this point,
right?
The fact that
he made it a Blade Runner sequel and it's not, like, objectively disappointing and just, yeah. like, people are like... Just making a competent sequel that people aren't angry about
exactly.
was, like, an extremely high bar. And instead it seems like he made, like, as much as you could ask for a sequel that...
He got here's
the question. As someone that's a fan... now you've seen both.
Yeah.
A sequel does exist. Are you glad the sequel exists?
100%. 100%.
In the sense that it's additive or just because you enjoyed being in that world again?
Here is my hope. I can't wait. All right. So Katie McCarthy over at US Gamer just wrote a piece today that was like, here's how Blade Runner has influenced games for years. I can't wait for this movie to be the next cyberpunk influence on games and on culture at writ large, because what we've seen is like shadows of William Gibson, shadows of Blade Runner, shadows of the original Ghost in the Shell again and again and again and again. And like even like Deus Ex, like Human Revolution, which is a game I liked a lot, didn't go too far off the beaten path in terms of what it was showing. Even the Shadowrun games that have been very good are still very firmly connected to the core questions of what early cyberpunk works were doing. And then on top of that, there's lots of bad cyberpunk where it is just a chrome arm that like gives you that is also a gun, right? There is also just a lot of bad cyberpunk, which is just like, what if we fought a bunch of robots? And I'm excited for this to be a match under the stove or, you know, under the pilot light of a new breed of cyberpunk stuff to come out again. Obviously, to be clear, cyberpunk as a genre has lots of cool stuff in it that is not that stuff. Like, cyberpunk got really good. It got really queer. It got, you know, it started to be written by people of color, by women. And that stuff addresses a lot of the early problems with cyberpunk. So, like, I don't think it's a genre where it's like everything needs to be like William Gibson or bust. But I do think that what I'm hopeful for is that this turns to 5 years from now, we're all playing games that are inspired by the questions that came from this. In the same way that I'm excited for whatever people are inspired by from Nier Automata or from other games that have in the last few years, like, leveled up or fuck off me.
Wow.
raised the bar in terms of, like, what they can do when it comes to, you know, a setting that has cyborgs and shit in it. You know, like, if you're going to have cyborgs and androids, like, just, we're so far past our androids real people. Like, we're so far past it at this point. It's a solved question. It's way more interesting to think, like, okay, androids are real people. Now let's imagine worlds in which we complicate that further. And what do you feel about this? And it is, it's like so good. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to get into specifics, but there's like a Voight Kampff test equivalent in this movie that it goes back to the thing we've said again about the kind of arbitrary nature of power and about how having power is often about having the ability to be arbitrary. And the original Voight Kampff test, also arbitrary, also bullshit. But this one is like pushed to the limit in a way that's so good. Rob, I really need you to see this. Patrick, try to find a babysitter, maybe, or just get it on Blu-ray. It'll be out on Blu-ray
or just
in 4
months. Or just put the, you know, crib, right?
Do you think my kid can make it through this movie, you know?
Yeah.
She's one.
Oh, I was more going to suggest, like, if you put a lid on a crib, baby's safe, right? Like, it's fine.
Crib lid.
I just puncture some holes in that lid.
Yeah.
Right. Breathe, baby, breathe.
Yeah, it should be good.
Just drop some tubes in there with milk. Is that what babies eat? Milk,
you know,
and applesauce.
As a fish killer, I don't know if I'm going to necessarily take your advice, Rob.
Oh man, I gotta actually tell my buddy too. Like, look,
does your buddy listen to this show? If your buddy listens to this show,
no, friends
and learns-
do. So someone's gonna be like, Doug, Zachney's in your house, killing your fucking fish, and like. I just want you to know, like, Julian, I didn't kill the fish. The fish got sick, and it did not get better. And I think it had something to do with the fact that the water in the tank got cloudy for mysterious reasons, and, yeah, something went wrong in that ecosystem. There's no more betta fish. And maybe I could have done better, but I did my best. Patrick, anyway, since this turned into an unintentional Idle Weekend episode, and since I would love to talk about other cool, cheery things before we wrap this up, Patrick, what's cool? Like, what are you into this weekend? If you're not going to have time for Blade Runner, like, what are you into culturally or games wise? We haven't you know, what are we having fun with besides reading awful BuzzFeed articles?
The article was
good. BuzzFeed articles about awful people.
Yes. Articles that make you feel awful. Yes. October, every year, me and my wife for a long time have been doing something called Shocktober, where we come up with a list of horror films, 31 films, and we try to watch as many of them as we can throughout the month. And then maybe 5 years ago, I started publishing the list online, just figuring, like, you know, I help be a guide for folks that are interested in horror films. And so earlier this week, I published the list for 2017. There's a link on my Twitter that goes to a Medium post. And then alongside that, my wife and I are always talking about horror films. So we started recording a podcast about a year ago called Till Death Do Us Part, where we pretty much have the we just have the conversation. Yeah, I don't like branding things. I hate it, but I actually feel pretty good about like the naming of that podcast.
It's extremely good.
So we hadn't done an article for or a podcast for about a year because that's the exact amount of time
since we had
our daughter.
Yeah.
But then I set up a sort of pseudo podcast studio in my office, which I've been meaning to do, so that now like the microphones just stare at us when we like go past to watch TV at night. And
oh, that's a really good horror setup.
Guilts us into recording. Our horror is not having enough free time to record a podcast about horror movies. so we did one talking about It, Gerald's Game, which is a adaptation of one of Stephen King's weakest books, but is actually turned into a really strong film because they reinterpret the story. And the reason it's weak is because it's largely a rehash of Carrie. It's the same premise of someone strapped to a bed and what do they do to survive. It's directed by Mike Flanagan, who did a great movie called Hush that's also on Netflix. He also did an underrated movie called Oculus. We talked about, what was the third movie? An awful survival movie called Killing Ground, in which they deeply exploit a small child who is definitely the same age as our kid in a way that
Jesus
it's impossible
Christ.
To tell. Are they exploiting putting a child in danger and harm? Like when you become a parent, or this is true for anything, like any like sort of like personal like attachment or trauma that like comes up when you watch films, and this is not exclusive to horror, it's hard to tell, are you having the reaction you're having because you have a personal attachment to that?
Right.
Or are they exploiting the ability, like, so for example, in horror, they viciously exploit rape and other forms of sexual assault, not in a way that's like, they do it because it's easy and it's shocking, not because they're making a point. And so, like, it's sometimes hard to tell.
They're exploring an issue.
right. And it's sometimes hard to tell when you watch any sort of a story, but definitely in horror, it's like, am I having this reaction because, like, they're actually exploiting it, or am I having this reaction because I'm a parent and I can't, like, separate my emotions? So then we talked through those movies, and then we made our list live on the podcast. It was, like, we both brought a bunch of movies and then came up with 31 movies for people to watch if they're interested. It's a mixture of, like, stuff that's coming out in theaters, stuff that is available on streaming services, old stuff, new stuff. So, and hopefully a bunch of things that, if you're like us, where we've seen everything, you know, so we have to really kind of dig the bottom of the barrel to try and find new stuff. Hopefully you'll find some stuff that you've never heard of before. So
rad. Where can people find out? Is there like a quicker link for people to find that? Is it on iTunes?
Yeah, you can find the podcast on iTunes under Till Death Do Us Part, or you can Till Death Podcast at or simplecast.fm. And then, yeah, if you just scroll past on my Twitter feed, I should probably just make it my pinned tweet.
Make it your pinned tweet for the month, maybe. Yeah. Good call.
Yeah, I'll do that right now. So my pinned tweet will be the Shocktober list. So
rad. Rob, what about you? Are you playing anything?
I got a little game I want to talk about.
Uh-oh.
And I'll tell you straight up, could be problematic, but we'll see. We'll get into this. The game is called Affliction, Salem 1692.
Okay.
And it's developed by Dan Hundix, and it's got some great art by Lisan Lake, and it is a worker placement board game about the Salem witch trials.
Okay. And I love to place cubes down on things representing people who are then traumatized and killed.
Yeah. It's real good. because like it is basically the game portrays it as like, look, this is a small town horror story of like people using superstition and religion to carry out like social vendettas against each other, to steal property from people that they viewed as like social rivals. And then the mechanics are all about like the almost like viral spread of fear and paranoia in a community. And so like to a degree, it's like a strategy game where like you represent one of the families that's involved in this and your goal is to protect your own, but then also you've got people you have grudges against and you want to arrest them for being witches. But every character has like special abilities. Every other player has their own family that they're sort of trying to protect. And then there's a lot of, neutral cards and, they're, like, what is going on is definitely gross, but it's gross in the way that, like, not quite the Crucible, but I guess, I think there was a Fritz Lang movie called, like, Fury or something, which is about, like, how a small-town lynch mob ends up forming. It's about, like, the pettiness and jealousy of that can exist within a community and otherwise idyllic community. And then the way that, like, you know, certain beliefs can just be weaponized against other members of that community. And the cool thing I really like is there's both direct actions that you can take against other characters. So you can, like, levy accusations. You can use social influence to recruit characters to your social circle. But then there's also a sort of collective mechanic, which is, like, fear, that if one person is generating fear tokens, so what fear tokens do is they basically disable other characters in the game. So like if like people are afraid of this person in the community, they lose all their social power, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not in jail yet, but they're no longer like viable. They're no longer like a viable unit to use. If you're just generating fear for by yourself and trying to target people down, it's not going to do anything. There's too many ways for other players to clear it away. But a lot of players can generate a lot of fear and target down the leading family and just sort of like spam it and create like, and it's this weird, like you're playing the game and it's like, oh shit, this is some like really awful, like this is some witch hunt shit that's going on. It's just, you are like, everyone's seeing what this one person has and they're doing pretty well. Let's, you know, it's torches and pitchforks time, let's go for it. It's an interesting board game and a very seasonal one here in New England, I suppose. But
time for the witch hunts.
Yeah, look, it's now a tourist location. So yeah, it's a really interesting board game. Way more interesting than I thought it was going to be. Like I thought it was just going to be a, you know, thin theme on, you know, a pretty bog standard worker placement game.
Right.
There's more going on, and I really really dig it. There's some gross elements, but you know it's gross material.
Good luck. It's telling it. Good luck ostracizing a tenth of the population from your city and from your town. I hope that they live well out in the wild. Hopefully, they are witches, and then maybe they'll be able to survive. That'll be good. I got nothing.
We don't know what would have happened if we hadn't hunted witches in Massachusetts. Like, who knows, right?
The whole world would be different. That's actually where we needed to first. If we wanted Trump not to be elected, we have to go back to the witch hunts. Yeah. I got nothing. What I got is I'm going to wait around tomorrow until this person from unnamed telecom company shows up and fixes my fucking internet. Remember that conversation an hour and a half ago that we had?
Yeah.
What is time? All right, we should go. I don't have anything fun this weekend.
All right.
Maybe I'll.
Peace.
I don't. fuck it. That's too quick. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
Or be good at it.
Oh my fucking god. It was not even or be good at it now. Patrick. Patrick.
Thanks to Bowen for letting us use his track, Miss You, off the EP Pale Machine.
Waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find Patrick Klepek at Patrick Klepek and Rob Zachney at Rob Zachney. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. Waypoint.zone also will take you to our website. What else? Discourse.zone will take
you to
the...
What do we say to Austin?
Someone wrote in. This is actually a thing. Someone wrote in to be like, Austin, why do you say be good and be good at it when Danielle's not here? That's her thing. And the thing that they said that I didn't know was that Danielle started saying that because she felt like she couldn't say peace when she was hosting.
Correct.
Because it's my thing. Right. Peace is not my thing. Peace is our thing. Peace is a thing I want us to be able to do. All of us. Except Rob Zachney. Be good and be good at it. Peace.
Peace?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.